Welcome into another episode of In the Pen, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host, Cal Nussliger, and as always, I am joined, warming up in the bullpen, by Rick Graham, Pitcherless own bullpen expert. Rick, we made it. We are just a few days away from opening day. How are you feeling? Scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you?
I'd say I put that at 11 right now. I mean, it's crazy, yeah, to think that our next podcast will actually be able to talk about real, you know, regular season results.
It's really crazy. We've said on multiple shows, I did not believe we'd get to this point this early in the season, but I'm not going to complain. I'm excited as I always am for opening day, but it just has an added level of excitement because of what we went through this offseason. But it's going to be great, and we're going to have a lot to talk about. So let's power through. We're going to get through our last preseason show of the season. But there is a lot to talk about. A lot of news has happened. We're going to break down some of the news that's happened in the past week since we recorded, including a pretty big trade that you may have heard of, and then some of the repercussions of that. And then go through some more pitchers on Rick's list that you can find on pitcherlist.com. We're not going to go through the obvious names because they're obvious. You know what you're going to get from him. But kind of dive a little bit deeper into some of those confusing names on the back end, the confusing close situations, and dive a little deeper as to guys to target late in your draft, because we're getting that point. We're actually in a part late in our draft right now for the Pitcherless Podcast Network draft. So we may be making a live pick while we're on air. So that'll provide you a little bit of entertainment as well.
Yes. And we can't guarantee it's going to be a reliever, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
We wanted to make it work that way, but we're at the point now where relievers are just, we got our closers and it's too early to take one of those speculative guys. So I don't think we'll make a reliever pick, but we'll keep you guys in mind when we do. So let's get right into the news. And a guy you may have heard of, we speculated about this name being moved like everybody else in the baseball industry, but Craig Kimbrel has finally been traded. He's going to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Rick, if you're still drafting at this point, Where does this vault Kimbrel? Have you put out your latest list? Where do you have him? What tier do you put him in? And how early do you draft him now?
I have him right now. I think I have him at 5 for the list that's coming out on Tuesday the 5th, which is, you know, about where nothing's really changed. I was, as long as he was in a closer role somewhere, he was going to be a top 6 to 8 option, but you know, landing in LA, obviously, it's a great situation. He's the closer, nothing to worry about there. Even after his absolutely disastrous debut with the Dodgers, I have no worries about him and taking him as, you know, an elite, you know, to second tier type closer option.
And then what does this do for, we know the setup, guys. We have Blake Treinen now drops all the way down. It's where, you know, in terms of holds, how high would you value him in terms of the next guys up in throughout the league?
Yeah, I think Treinen becomes one of the, you know, top 5 or so setup options. If you're in a holds league, he's still, you know, don't drop him. He's still valuable. And then I think like someone like Daniel Hudson gets probably hurt the most here. I think possibly Gratterall gets pushed down the pecking order, but I think between Treinen and I think Vezia is going to be a factor. He's the lefty out of the pen. So I think Vezia and Treinen are still the two top setup guys there.
And then same question for the White Sox. Craig Kimbrel's out of the way. So who becomes the next guy up if, God forbid, something happens to Liam Hendricks?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember like looking at their bullpen not too long ago and thinking like this is the deepest bullpen in baseball possibly, and now looking at it, it's, you know, it's Hendricks, Bummer, and, you know, Graveman are two of the, you know, they're two top 15, you know, holds options, and then after that it's really thin. It's like Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, Joe Kelly's hurt, he's going to be back at some point, but like it's, you know, Ronaldo Lopez and Jose Ruiz. So it's really, you know, Bummer and Graveman are going to have to carry them to get to the ninth inning for Hendricks this year.
And we should mention, along with Chicago, that maybe it holds option Garrett Crochet is out for the season now. He's going to be getting Tommy John surgery, so take him off your board. He probably was in that middle middle round, middle relief role for the White Sox and maybe could have factored in some saves. So cross him off. There's looked him in the future, but he's going to be out for the season. So that, like you said, makes the White Sox bullpen still deep. You got the obvious big names, but it's definitely a loss as long and also losing Lance Lynn for time being. Maybe they push Ronaldo Lopez or somebody into the rotation for a spot start. So keep an eye on there. But the two elite guys after Hendricks, Bummer and Graveman, are definite must drafts. The next trade is nowhere near as exciting, but it still may mean something for fantasy baseball and involved in two New York teams. The Yankees traded Jolly Rodriguez to the New York Mets in exchange for Miguel Castro. Obviously, they're in the middle of the relief role, but does this have any sort of significance to you? Do you consider them for holds or anything for fantasy purposes?
Yeah, I think they're both. I think they're around like the 50 to 60 range in my holds rankings, which, you know, I'm with both of them, I've had them high. I've had them as high as about 20 before. So it's like they're both talented pitchers. And I think from a baseball standpoint, this trade makes a ton of sense. The Mets needed to get a lefty. You know, the Yankees have, you know, a couple other options with, you know, Peralta and Lukey. And I think Castro's he's the exact type of like arm the Yankees love out of the bullpen. Just really good slider, you know, can touch, you know, 99, 100. So I think it's a good trade that makes sense for both teams. I don't know if it helps their value right now. It's kind of a wait and see thing, but definitely two names to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you mentioned it. The Mets definitely needed that lefty. I don't think Chase and Shreve or Alex Claudio were going to be major factors. So this is a good guy for the Yankees. We mentioned Miguel Castro in our nationally previewed last week as a, you know, a specialist in terms of that slider, someone I look out for with the nastiest pitches article. So that's going to be fun watching my team have a pitcher like that. So trade works out both sides. It's not as exciting for fantasy purposes, but it's worth two guys worth monitoring to see if they can get into some high leverage, because we know the Yankees have had success with these sort of guys, with Clay Holmes and Loaiza and Green. So maybe Castro can work his way into that mix a little bit. The last trade that was of note, and we should note that normally we record these on Tuesday nights due to scheduling conflicts. We are recording on Monday, April 4th. So if another breaking trade comes out on Tuesday, we won't get our reaction to that until next week. But join a Discord, look out for Twitter. We'll make sure to put a reaction out there for Twitter purposes, but due to scheduling conflicts, we're not going to be able to record on our usually scheduled day. So the final trade that may have a bit more fantasy purposes took place between the Marlins and the Orioles. The Orioles unloaded two of their best relievers in Cole Sulzer and Tanner Scott to the Miami Marlins. We know that, you know, this may transition into it, but we can get this out of the way. Or these two teams. We know the Orioles, those were probably the two higher names for saves. What do we even do with Baltimore trying to go for saves now? It kind of takes away our first team we previewed on the show was Baltimore, and now we have to almost re-preview it again. Where does Baltimore stand now if you're trying to find saves?
Yeah, it's kind of a shame because like Cole Sulzer was looking like a really nice, good late round speculative closer who could maybe, you know, give you good ratios and maybe get 20 saves. But now I've heard like Jorge Lopez's name thrown around, and I think that could make some sense. Like he has good stuff. Maybe it plays up a little bit better in the back end. You know, he's failed as a starter, but we've seen a ton of failed starters become really good relievers. So maybe he's that type of guy. Dylan Tate's been, you know, he closed out a couple games last year. He's the most experienced of the group now. So it's probably between Lopez and Tate. Are they worth it in the standard 12 teamer? Probably not. Probably wait and see. But, you know, if you're in a 16 teamer, it might be worth taking a shot on one of them.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit thinking of Jorge Lopez as a save option just because of what we've seen from him getting DFA'd from Kansas City, never really getting anything going. And Dylan Tate, I feel like he's got the best stuff, but his strikeout numbers are just not there for anything for fantasy purposes. But we know you need saves, and if you're in a deep league and if you're in a 15-teamer on an FBC or, like I said, a 16-teamer, those deeper leagues, you need to find saves where you can get them. So keep an eye out for these guys and see what you can do there. But it's ugly in Baltimore. I don't know how many saves you're going to get, but you got to find them where you can. And moving over to the Miami side of this, these were two guys we really liked for saves for Baltimore. Do they fit into the picture now of Miami?
Yeah, it's a good, I mean, it just like completely muddles Miami's situation because it was a 3-person race and now it's to like a 5 to 6-person race, you know, because it sounds like Dylan Floro is actually not going to miss that much time. So now there's 6 names there that are all kind of in the closer mix. And I don't think anyone has any idea who's going to, you know, win that job right away. So I think Sulzer, I mean, definitely has a chance too. I don't even think it's worth speculating on in 12-teamers here, but definitely it kind of sucks the wind out of Anthony Bender's sails. So
yeah, I was really excited about Anthony Bender. He was going to be someone I was taking late. I took him late in a couple drafts prior to his trade, and I just took the wind out of my sails with that. And hey, maybe one of my next drops in TGFBI now because of how, obviously I'll keep an eye on it if it works out, but unfortunately I may have to take an early L on us closer speculation, and I don't like doing that to us this early, Rick. I'm not gonna lie. I don't like taking L's this early.
It is too early for that. And even taking someone like Bender that late, it's still kind of hurts to be like, oh, well, to kind of just give up on him this early, you know, but you have to make moves and, you know, I get it.
Yeah, so this kind of transitions us into what we wanted to spend the rest of the show talking about. Rick had his article out with the top 30, with top save candidates, top closers in the league, closing time. Where can they find that article? Obviously, you can find it on pitcherlist.com, but you put a link out on Twitter. Where can they find that on Twitter?
Yeah, if they follow me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham, or follow the In the Pen podcast on Twitter as well at In the Pen Pod.
No one plugs us, but no one plugs our own show better than us. I just got to say that. But yeah, keep an eye out. We're going to be putting that. Rick puts a lot of work into that, and we're going to have on site daily articles recapping what bullpens look like that will help me immensely in trying to prepare a good show. But what we wanted to do is dive into these middling closer situations. Obviously, the elite guys are the elite guys. There's not too much difference, we're going to say, the top 15 or so. You know they're going to get saves. You know what you're going to get out of them. So we want to dive into these deeper closer situations. Who's going to lead them in saves? Try and give you those late round options. We preview the teams, but we want to take a deeper look into those and try and clear things up a little bit. So we started off with Baltimore, Miami. I think we dove pretty well into that, but just before we kind of transition, if you have to take a Baltimore reliever, I know you kind of, it was Lopez or Tate, if you have to pick one, if our listeners are in their late rounds of their drafts, who's going to lead Baltimore in saves?
I'm going to take Jorge Lopez because I see the stuff and I feel like there's something there for him to transition into a pretty good reliever, and just the strikeout upside's definitely there more than it is with Tate. So I'll go with Lopez, but I can't picture someone getting more than 12 saves in this bullpen this year.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly. I'll take the opposite side. I'll say Tate just because he was in the bullpen most time. He was in the later game situations for Baltimore last year, but I admit to what you said that the strikeout upside is really not there for Tate and it might be better for Lopez, but just trends from last year is where I'm going for that. But don't rely on it. Please look at almost any other team on this list that we're going to go through today to find your late saves.
Well, that's the thing. This whole list, everyone we're about to go through is, I mean, it's close to flip a coin as, you know, possible for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, but at least some of these teams have maybe a guy, or at least will get wins that can lead to saves. Baltimore, you don't know how many actually wins they're going to get. And then over to Miami. It's a big monster that you said it's probably going to be about 6 players deep, but who's your favorite in this closer battle?
I like Bender as the better pitcher. I feel like he should be closing, but it's not always the best pitcher who's closing games. So I think Flora threw a bullpen today. You know, everything went well. So I think he gets back early enough and, you know, they probably slot him back into the role and he can probably go on to close 20 or so games.
Yeah, I'll take Bender just because I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to take an Elvis early. I think he just has the best stuff and it will lead to that, but there's so many people deep. They obviously have a reason for trading for Colster or Scott. They have multiple lefties, so that could let Scott get some saves or Blyer get saves, but mm-hmm. I'll stick with Bender just because of I believe he's the best pitcher and want to buy into that over anybody else, but I'm willing to admit quickly that I could very much be wrong with there. So the next one that we want to dive into is the Seattle Mariners. During our preview, we talked about how deep Penn is. There's multiple guys, but this is a team we're clearly very excited about. One of us had them as a playoff team, and, you know, a lot of save opportunities. Ken Giles is going to start the year on the injured list due to finger discomfort, so maybe that makes it a little bit more clear. So if we're trying to peg saves in Seattle, which way are you going?
This is another one of those kind of like, who should it be versus who will it be? And, you know, I think Paul Sewald's earned the right to be the closer here. He, you know, had a huge season last year. If they made the playoffs last year, that's like, you know, the reason why. And so I feel like he has the best strikeout upside. He's got the highest upside in the bullpen, so he should be the closer. But Drew Steckenrider, even still last year, Steckenrider, who had a really good year, but I don't think, A, it's sustainable, and B, I still think Sewald was better. So I feel like Steckenrider's going to be there. And, you know, Diego Castillo's got closer experience and, you know, gives them that three-headed closer monster they had last year still there, plus, you know, Ken Giles when he returns in early May, late April. Who leads this team in saves is anyone's guess, but I'm still targeting Sewald as if he is. So I think he's worth a shot in late rounds pretty much everywhere. And, you know, if he doesn't close out 20 games, he should still be fine for strikeouts and ratios.
Yeah, Swirly, I really still want to say Diego Castillo will be a thing, and I think he is right up there in terms of stuff with Sewald, but it seems like they want him as the fireman in the bigger situations in the seventh and eighth innings and likely getting the ball to one of these two guys. So I'll agree with you that Sewald's a guy I'd rather take, but you can't argue with Steckenrider, and if you're in that late round of your drafts, I wouldn't mind taking just a shot on Steckenrider and seeing what happens.
Yeah, he's like, you know, he's not going to get the strikeouts. He's not going to have he's not the fancy option like Sewald or Castillo, but he very well could, you know, wind up leading the team in saves, and no one would be surprised by that.
Yeah, I think we've really have a good case for that, and he's not going to make Scott Service is not going to make things easy on us, and you know that's going to be a situation you monitor very, very closely this season. But speaking of monitoring closely, we always have done that with Tampa Bay, and this season may be another one of those situations. It still seems like it's Andrew Kittredge, but it's always a situation worth discussing as he's near the bottom of your ranks because of Tampa Bay. Is he the favorite? How confident would you be drafting him because of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, with Fairbanks missing time and Anderson missing time, those are two big, you know, two guys that would have been big competition for him. So, but it's even still, like, this Rays bullpen just continues to churn out. And they still have Chargaud, Whistler. You know, if they want to use a lefty, Brooks Raley or Springs is back. So it's going to still be a committee, but I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if, like, this is the year kind of they just stuck with someone like Kittredge in the role. And maybe we get, you know, 20, 25, 30 saves from him. I mean, they kind of ran with, you know, Emilio Pagan a couple years ago. So it's not totally out of the question that they pick someone and stick with them.
Yeah, and this, like you said, this is the most likely of all the guys we've talked about. I'd be most willing to take Kittredge because of his competition. I think he would be the highest of these relievers, but you have to remember what Tampa Bay does and be willing to pivot. But he seems like the guy. He got those opportunities. They like their relievers in Fireeyes and in Chargo, but they seem like they're similar to what we said about Castillo, setting the ball up to get the Kittredge. So I would agree. Kittredge has a very good chance of getting these saves, but you know what Tampa Bay does is find a reliever that none of us have heard of, have him compete for saves, and like they do with Nick Anderson and all these other guys. So just be willing to pivot. But I think he is, of the guys we've talked about so far, definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And sticking in the AL East, we go over to Boston. Matt Barnes seems to be the guy, and you know, or at least that's what people have said, but is Jake Diekman going to eat into that right now? How confident would you be drafting Barnes for a Red Sox team that, unfortunately, me saying that, it's going to be pretty good this year?
The thing, yeah, with Barnes, he hasn't looked quite right this spring, which is, you know, I was big on Barnes heading into the year. I thought he was, you know, a prime bounce-back candidate. But his stuff's down, his velo's down. They're calling it a mechanical issue, and, you know, sure, it could be, but the spring hasn't been going well for him. But working in his favor is none of the Red Sox relievers have looked good this spring for the most part, so I still think he opens the year as the closer. Yeah, Diekman will be around. It sounds like Whitlock's going to be in a kind of a stretched out role, like piggybacking off Rich Hill, so I don't think Whitlock's really a closer candidate anymore. But maybe they brought back Hansel Robles, and I don't like it. It feels kind of gross to say it, but I mean, he might be next in line at this point. So, you know, Hansel Robles, for those in really deep leagues, he might be the Red Sox closer again.
Maybe this is what's going to make me throw up in my mouth again. I don't know. That's another name. It's a gross situation. Barnes seems like the guy, but you've watched plenty of Red Sox games, and hearing that his velo's down and stuff's not looking great, it makes you very concerned, and you have to be, if you're Boston, willing to pivot quick. So It's definitely a situation to monitor, just like it is for this next team in Pittsburgh. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how many saves there actually be. We talked about it last week of our National League preview, but nobody else has stepped into it. So it's still David Bednar versus Chris Stratton. Who's your favorite of those two?
Definitely Bednar. And I see this is, I think it was 2019 when Shane Green he was leading the league in saves after 2 months on a really bad Detroit Tigers team. And ever since that happened, I've always been like, well, it doesn't matter how good the team is, like there's still going to be save opportunities potentially. Like if you're winning only, you know, 40%, 30% of your games, as long as they're, you know, within 2 to 3 runs, you know, you're going to have save opportunities. So that plus like Bednar's pure stuff is just, it's disgusting. Like if he was on a good team closing out games, he would be a top 10 closer easily. So it's really hard for me to just like ignore him completely. But that said, Pittsburgh's going to be bad, and the timeshare of Stratton is really frustrating. But I still think Bednar is worth it. He's sliding down in drafts to probably where he should be, which is a late round pick, which at that point, I think he's worth a flyer.
So it sounds like of these guys, he's maybe your favorite. Is there any of them that you would take over Bednar's, or you would be most willing to take the chance on him out of the guys we said so far?
I would still take a chance because of the wins do matter, obviously. So I'm still taking a chance on, you know, a Seawald or Kittredge first. And then after that, I think I might be putting Bednar above Barnes. Right now, unless Barnes shows something in the next, if they say they've fixed his mechanics, we'll see. If like we see a drastic change, then that changes things. But like, I think Bednar is at least a safe, you know, just solid reliever. And even if he only gets 12 saves, you know, strikeouts and ratios still matter. So, yeah, I'd say Bednar behind the two, the Seattle and Tampa Bay guys.
Yeah, I like that. It's unfortunate that he's in this committee, but Derek Shelton's at least, or yeah, he's at least came out and said that this is going to be a committee and let us be aware of that rather than us just finding that out early in the season. So draft with caution, but I would totally agree that he's so much better for the job. But if you're in a deep, deep league, keep an eye on Chris Stratton because he may be right there quick. And it's not pretty, but that's how it sounds like it's going to be.
Why can't the Pirates give us something like good, like something fun? They did demoted O'Neill Cruz. Can they give us like Bednar, like something exciting? It's not even that exciting, but I don't know. Just come on.
And even Ke'Bryan Hayes is battling an injury, which sounds like he'll be okay. But gosh, come on, Pittsburgh! Everyone's promoting guys. Everyone's doing fun things right now, and you're not. And that's just not fun.
No.
But one of those teams that are doing fun things is the Detroit Tigers. And their closing situation may be getting a bit clearer this spring training. Michael Fulmer hasn't looked great, so maybe this sets up Gregory Soto as the clear closer. I say maybe because it's another we'll see sort of thing. How confident would you be for Soto with his job security, or is Fulmer, even with a bad spring, someone that still is going to eat away at it?
Yeah, it's a good point with Fulmer. I think Soto's such a volatile, like he has been since, you know, he became a big name in the reliever, you know, realm. He's so volatile that you're just like, it's almost like you're waiting for, it just depends on when that like big, that like week of bad outings comes. If it comes early, then he probably loses his job and doesn't bounce back from it. But if it happens in the middle of the year, he'll probably be able to survive it. So I guess it just depends on when he kind of has his, you know, cold streak throughout the year. Yeah, Fulmer hasn't been great. There's some other interesting arms in this bullpen, but like Funkhauser's hurt. Lang's interesting. Joe Jimenez has always been teased us with his talent, but hasn't really put it all together. And yeah, if Andrew Chafin's healthy, then that makes a big difference. But I think Soto's still the favorite for saves here, but I'm still not giving up on Fulmer as a legitimate, you know, potential, you know, good closer here.
And like we said with the AL preview, AJ Hinch was known last year for never naming a closer. Every week, reporters would ask him about who his closer is, and he would not answer that. So it's going to make that a headache situation, but I'm becoming more willing to draft Soto than I was just because of how Fulmer has been in spring, but I don't want to put too much stock into that because he'll still be around. He'll still get his opportunities, but maybe this makes Soto more set. But then again, Soto's never been a fully established guy where you can be so confident with it. So I put him probably ahead of some of these guys, but you know, Fulmer is still someone I want to take a shot on, but I'm a little less willing to do it. But I'm still buying in that he'll get his opportunities. And we'll move on over now to San Diego, which has still made things not very clear, although trade rumors from this past weekend maybe take one name out of the running, but who knows. Rick, what the heck are we doing here? Who leads San Diego in saves if you want to try? And I know we didn't have an answer last week. We probably don't have it this week, but let's try.
I don't know. We never have an answer, but I think I've come around to Robert Suarez being the closer here. And I'm trying to figure out how high up he belongs here. But I think just reading notes from interviews and, you know, they were going to get rid of Emilio Pagan just to get rid of Eric Hosmer's contract. And if that's, you know, Suarez's top competition, I feel like that kind of makes him safe, you know, and going into the season. He's looked great this spring. His stuff, I mean, plays really well. And I think, you know, coming over from a lot of these relievers, actually pitchers in general coming over from Japan or Korea in their first year, I feel like in Major League Baseball, they typically have pretty good success. And maybe it's only 1 year, maybe it doesn't last, but I feel like, you know, hitters aren't used to, they haven't seen a lot of them. So I kind of am really feeling Robert Suarez right now, and I think he's a must, like he's into the must draft category for me now.
I like that. I'm still not giving up on Nelson Lamet for this job. He hasn't had a good spring, and that makes Suarez safe. I definitely think Suarez leads it. But if you're late in your drafts, I'm taking a shot on Nelson Lamet just because of what he is. It may be even more of a best ball pick, but I want to see what this guy can do in the back end of the pen because his stuff can be electric. So I'm taking that shot. I do agree Suarez is the favorite, and I'm becoming more willing to draft him than I was at all draft season. I'm probably not going to get him now because of how late I became willing to draft him. But if you're late in your drafts, I think you can be more confident with Suarez because Pagan's now out of the mix. Pierce Johnson, Austin Adams aren't big threats. The biggest one to me is Lamet, and you know he's not exactly the biggest threat in the world.
With Lamet, yeah, it's a good name to bring up because I he's moving up my save and hold or my holds, you know, leader or rankings. So I think even if he's not closing, I feel like he's still going to be a huge weapon for them.
Yeah, I want to see it happen. We're going to take a brief break. When we get back, before we get to these other teams, we're on the clock. We are on the clock in our Pitcherless Podcast Network Battle of the Pods draft. So you'll hear a quick thought process on what we should do with this coming pick. And then we'll dive back into the remaining couple of confusing close situations. And we're back from this after that brief message. So before we move on to these other remaining confuser close situations, we got to make a pick, Rick. We're up on the clock in this battle of the podcast. So real quickly, before we lose listeners, let's figure this out. Who are we looking at?
So, yeah, I feel like we need to go with a starter here. We're at pick 199, by the way, for all those that are interested. There's not a lot of pitching left. We probably should add a starter or an fielder, but I think starter is more pressing right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I want a starter. Obviously, it's not our most exciting pick. People want us to pick a reliever, but we can't do it at this point. There's not many relievers that are interesting up there. I'm good. We talked about it before the show. Adam Wainwright with that matchup with Pittsburgh is interesting. I'm willing to do that. I like Hyunjin Ryu. They're safe names that I'm good with. I don't know if you have anyone else in mind.
At this point, I'm looking at the board. Yeah, there's not a lot exciting here. I agree. Take Wainwright, you know, get that good matchup out of the way and then, you know, go from there.
Boom. The first live pick in the history of this podcast will be Adam Wainwright. Not what you expected to hear on a podcast about relievers, but hey, he relieved at one point, so that's got to count for something.
True.
So let's get back over to what you actually turned this show for, and that is the relievers. And one of the names that was on the board that we could have took for relievers was Camilo Duvall, but that's not anything we want to do at this point because of recent comments. So, but is he still someone you want to speculate on saves, or has Jake McGee just taken all this wind out of those sails?
I think, like, so yeah, if it comes down to our last pick, like, Duvall might be worth a shot just because, again, it's another situation where, like, the best stuff in the bullpen, he probably should be closing if we're basing it off, you know, stuff and strikeout ability. And, you know, I think Jake McGee's good. He's solid. He's not, I don't think he's, you know, without his flaws. So someone who throws, you know, 90 plus percent fastballs and, you know, he gets touched up a little bit. So I still think Duvall is worth a shot. It's tough though, because we did see two different kind of, we saw two Duvalls last year, you know, Duvalls. We saw the early season one who really struggled with command. And then we saw, you know, the one in September who was arguably the best reliever in baseball in September. So It's tough to say. I think I'm going to say, though, that he leads this team in saves this year. I think, ooh, you know, McGee's going to have a couple of rough outings in April, and Duvall comes in and, you know, takes the job, runs with it.
I'm still going to put McGee up there, but it's not a situation I'm fully attacking, because we have to remember Tyler Rogers is also going to fit into this mix as well. And maybe that makes it more likely it goes to one of them, but I still think they'll go with the more safe option. They like what they got from McGee last year, and they'll go back to that. It won't be great. I think one of these guys, the leader in this first team for saves, might be 15 saves.
Yeah,
but it's going to be three guys with 8 saves or more. So, you know, deep leagues, you're going to want to target this pen. Just, you know, be ready to burn and churn and move quickly through all these teams. But San Francisco is one of those that definitely is on that. Definitely belongs here.
For sure.
And another one that you're going to be burning and churning is Washington. We talked about it last week and kind of ended our preview on a sour note talking about Washington. And it's still pretty sour. But again, we kind of came away with it. One guy that we were more interested in. Has that changed? Is Tanner Rainey still the guy you're more interested in? Or are you starting to get back with back in on Kyle Finnegan?
Yeah, so this is part of the reason why I wanted to pick up Washington is Tanner Rainey has not looked that great this spring, and he didn't look great last spring. And I chalked it up last spring as, relievers sometimes struggle in the spring, not a big deal. But we saw how it played out in the regular season where he was just awful. And I hate to say it, but I think I'm moving out of the Tanner Rainey bandwagon. And not that I'm not like high. I don't believe in Kyle Finnegan as the long-term answer here, but it does kind of move up my board slightly because he does have some sort of job security where, you know, at least 5-6 other teams have, like, no, the closer, whoever that is, doesn't have any. So I guess Finnegan is a better look, worth a look later in drafts than Rainey at this point.
That makes me sad, because last week we were just hyping up Tanner Rainey, and I won't lie, I hadn't been paying as close attention as to who was leading that battle in Washington, and dang, I'm sad now. But if Kyle Finnegan, he's looked good, and Rainey hasn't looked as good, so maybe this makes Finnegan more intriguing. I'll still take a late shot on Tanner Rainey, but again, it's the same stuff we said with Baltimore. Are you going to get many save opportunities out of Washington? No, but, you know, maybe you try and jump on it early and try and find the right time to jump ship before it turns ugly. And another ugly situation that I'm trying to is, besides these transitions that are pretty ugly, but another ugly situation is in Cincinnati, where we were hyping up Art Warren. We've been telling people, get Art Warren. Is that still our position since over this past week, or have spring performances kind of pushed other relievers into this mix?
It should be what we're saying today, but based off, you know, things what I've read and what I've seen, it looks like, you know, Luis Sessa and Hunter Strickland are very, very much in the mix to close out games. With Sessa maybe getting the edge, which is kind of surprising, but also not, because this is the Cincinnati Reds and they do some head scratching moves. But yeah, it's really a shame, because Art Warren is definitely the most, even with Lucas Sims healthy, I still think Warren's the most talented option in that bullpen. And it would be great to see Warren as like the ninth inning guy, and Sims, you know, being able to work, you know, seventh and eighth inning. And but I just don't feel like the Reds are going to make the right move here. And yeah, it hurts.
Here's a name to keep an eye on as well, who's in this mix, who you go on Fangraphs, you go on Roster Resource, the current leader for at least people on the current roster, not including Lucas Sims, projected leader in saves is Tony Santillan.
Yeah,
with 6. So keep an eye on him. He was the highest in their prospect ranks over the past year. So maybe they keep him involved in this mix. They're trying to find their version of TJ Antone to come in, like you said, what you want Lucas Sims' role to be. So we'll see who gets into that. That might clear his picture up a little bit, but right now it's a very, very blurry picture. I don't even know if I can recommend taking a late shot on any of these guys because of how blurry it is. Art Warren's definitely my favorite, and if I'm putting my name out there, Art Warren will lead this team in saves, but
I hope so.
I'm becoming less and less convinced of it over the next couple weeks. Continuing on with that trend of teams I'm becoming less and less convinced of, it's the Chicago Cubs. I don't know what's going to go on here. I don't know if it's going to be Givens, Wick, David Robertson, someone else I'm not mentioning. Rick, help me out here. What's going on in Chicago?
Nothing has really changed. It still looks like a four-headed closer monster, but I guess if I had to choose, I think David Robertson might start the year as a closer. I know I sound super confident saying that.
Yeah, very.
I think we kind of touched on it last time. I feel like Michael Givens still could. There's still something in there where he could like kind of break out. Even I know he's not the youngest reliever, youngest pitcher out there, but I feel like there's still more there. But until I see that, I feel like the tea leaves are kind of hinting at David Robertson starting the year as a closer. Yeah, I guess Wick's still there. You can't rule him out completely, but yeah, it's really just this is a situation that I don't really think is even worth chasing outside of really deep leagues. I don't see anyone getting more than 15 saves here, maybe.
No, I don't think anyone gets 15 saves. As a Yankee fan, I would like to see David Robertson still relevant and still pitch well. So it's nice to see that. I'm still not taking my money off Michael Givens. There's something about him, how he was used last year when he got traded over to Cincinnati and Colorado. We about to split time in. He was used in that role. I don't know if he's going to be, again, he might not get to the 15 saves, but I'll say him. I think he signed that free agent contract kind of right after the lockout to be in that sort of role. He's going to compete. There's no doubt about it. But I think he has a leg up just based off what Robertson's done these past couple years, which hasn't been anything crazy. Rowan Wicks, they're homegrown guys, so they might, or not homegrown, but he's been in the organization the longest, so they might like his stuff best. But there's something about Givens that, and them going out and purposely getting him and putting him right in this role that I'm kind of buying into it. So I'm still going to take a shot on Michael Givens, but it's with with not so much confidence.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope it is Givens, but yeah, well, I guess we'll see.
And now for us to admit when we are wrong. On our AL preview, we talked about how Joe Barlow was a safe guy for early season saves. And we thought we were pretty comfortable with that. And, well, Chris Woodward doesn't really agree with us. It sounds like Joe Barlow isn't exactly as locked in as a closer for Texas as we thought. So is he still your favorite to get saves in Texas? Or is other, who are these other guys that are in the mix that are worth keeping an eye on?
I feel like Chris Woodward is slowly becoming like the biggest headache for people trying to figure out for closer purposes. I feel like it's every year. Before it was like, you know, Jose Leclerc, is he the closer, is he not? Now it's Joe Barlow, who I don't see why he doesn't deserve to start the year as closer. But apparently Woodward doesn't feel comfortable with him there. So maybe he wants to go with the old veteran and Greg Holland, which is boring, but I mean, it happens. So I think Holland, I guess, right now is the favorite. It could be Spencer Patton, but I can't picture them going with Patton over Barlow, who, you know, both of them were here last year, and Barlow closed, Patton set him up. So
There was some weird feeling I got when the Greg Holland move was announced, where I'm like, he's going to be relevant in fantasy this year, isn't he? And you look on roster resource, he's currently not projected to make the roster, so obviously keep an eye on that. But if they went out and got Albert Abreu from the Yankees, but I don't think he gets into the closer role. But I like Barlow, and I still think he will lead. I don't think Matt Bush, he's currently in this mix, but we've tried this too many times with Texas. So I don't think he's going to work out. Garrett Richards is probably more of a middle relief goal role. I don't think he works his way to be the closer. So I'm still would say Barlow is the favorite, but if Greg Holland is on this roster, then he's going to eat into it. I can't just escape that feeling.
Yeah. Garrett Richards is another name that I've seen thrown around, but I just can't picture him closing out games. He did have some success as a reliever with the Red Sox last year, but like he's more of a, like, you know, 2 to 3 inning guy. He should be more of a, you know, 2 to 3 inning kind of fireman option than a closer. And yeah, Matt Bush, are we not over the Matt Bush experiment yet?
There's always those names where you look at and it's, haven't we done this before? Haven't we seen this movie enough times where it's like, let's move on from this? But Matt Bush is just the right at the top of the list of like, let's just give up on that idea. But yeah, in holds leagues, I'll take a shot on Richards. Like I said, he had success with Boston, and I think he'll be involved in this mix where he's helping get the ball to Barlow. But I would still put my money for saves for Barlow. But the more you see from Garrett Richards, the more interested I am in terms of holds from getting him.
I just am seeing this right now that, you know, Holland and Spencer Patton might not make the opening day roster, which I thought he was pretty much a lock, you know, leading up to the season. So yeah, I don't really know what's going on there.
And let's not forget too that Jose Leclerc and Jonathan Hernandez are working their way back from Tommy John, and we'll eat into this mix by mid-season or so. Maybe it'll ease it in, but it wouldn't shock me if they're involved in this mix by that mid-season. So try and jump the saves early, and then this might be another team you jump off by mid-season and go find another confusing team to stream. And wrapping up our segment on these confusing closer situations is maybe the most confusing team in the entire league, and it's Colorado. They signed Alex Colome. We thought, okay, at least we know who's going to be getting saves. But again, comments by Bud Black have tempered those expectations. So is he still the favorite for these, how many save opportunities Colorado's going to get?
Yeah, I think, you know, Bud Black has to have a lot of pull and making, obviously, the decision making there. So if he's saying that he wants a closer who's got, you know, high strikeout upside, then tend to believe that he's saying this for a reason. So I think that definitely puts Colome on notice, at least. You know, Bard has had some success. He's also had some issues. He had some issues last year, but Bard's the strikeout guy there outside of him and Robert Stevenson, who I can't imagine. I love Stevenson. I think he's one of the better relievers there, but I just can't imagine them putting him above Colome, Bard, Estevez. So I'm kind of leaning towards Bard starting the year as the closer based off the comments and that Black's made. So I don't really trust anyone here. I don't think it's worth chasing, but you know, it might be just, you know, worth monitoring how, if Bard starts in the role, seeing how he looks.
So if he starts the year, do you think he ends with the most saves, or does he pull Daniel Bard from last year and turn this role over quickly?
That's the thing. It's Colorado. It's none of these guys are particularly, you know, you're not going to mistake them for, you know, Josh Hader, Liam Hendricks. So it's like, there's probably going to be a lot of volatility here. There's going to be some turnover. There's, you know, probably a couple guys end up, you know, getting 5 to 8 saves, maybe 10 to 12. But I don't think, probably another team where we're not, probably not going to see anyone with 15 or more saves.
Yeah, and you mentioned a name to keep an eye on this pen. You've mentioned on our show last week, you mentioned in the Discord, Robert Stevenson is someone that we should keep an eye on in terms of he gets that sort of use, whether it's deep in the game as holds or if he works his way into his closer conversation. I don't think that he's entirely out of the running either, but probably want to avoid this situation because it's Colorado, and I don't want a Colorado closer, even though I may have drafted him at some point in one of our leagues and down the community of the leagues.
Then the problem with Stevenson, too, is the one problem you don't want there is that he's just prone to giving up a lot of home runs. So, you know, he misses a lot of bats, but when he does miss bats, they tend to go a long ways.
Imagine being him. Your problem is giving up long balls and you get traded. It's like, yes, I finally can use this. Oh, I'm going where?
Get out of Cincinnati to go to Colorado. Yep.
What a world. What a thing baseball is. So that wraps up that segment. Just if you made it this far and you got through all these teams, thank you. Who are your three favorites of these guys? If you had to pinpoint, I know there's a lot of names we went through, but if you had to pick the three guys you're most willing to take late in your draft, who would those be?
I'll kind of mix it up here. I'll go with Kittredge, Robert Suarez, and then I think if one of Bednar or Duvall fall, that's the option. Whichever one falls the farthest.
I think it makes sense. I would agree with Kittredge in there. I'd agree that Suarez is getting right up there. And I think I'm getting to that point where I'm becoming more confident with Matt Barnes with Boston, but you know, I just don't know how much Jake Diekman or Hansel Robles really are anything. But
as a Red Sox as a Red Sox fan, I really hope you're right, because I don't want to see Matt Barnes being, you know, the Matt Barnes we know he can be. So hope you're right.
Now, the best thing to do would just be say, hey, Garrett Whitlock, you were great last year. Let's just keep you where you're comfortable and put you in the back of the pen. But we know they're not going to do that because their starting pitching is also injury prone and they need to stretch him out.
But it's,
it's going to be a lot of fun. So that wraps up this episode of In the Pen, the final episode before we get to opening day. Stay tuned each and every week as we're going to do similar segments to this. We're going to dive into the latest news, who's losing their jobs, who's moving up the rankings, dive into Rick's list each and every week. We're not going to stop talking about relievers. This is what we do, and we're going to be giving you the latest news as it happens and what it means for fantasy purposes. But where can they find, you mentioned it before, where can they find you on Twitter? Where can they find the show to keep up with your latest opinions on these many, many relievers?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham, and the show podcast is In the Pen Pod.
Man, you can find me at Callan underscore Elsliger. I'll be tweeting it out as well. I won't be as smart as Rick, but hey, I can talk into a microphone, and that apparently was good enough for Nick to give me this show. But we're gonna keep diving into these guys. If you want to continue talking with us outside of Twitter, please join our Pitcherless Discord. You go to pitcherless.com/PL+. Subscribe to get 24/7 access to everybody in the Pitcherless staff and talk baseball, talk relievers, talk starters, any fantasy questions. We've got our entire staff willing and able to help you. And if you want to talk anything else, we're there to talk that too. And that's maybe more where we spend more of our time nowadays, because you know there's only so much baseball you can talk about. But I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. Our two teams face off on opening day. We may have to off air do a show bet on the series. We may have to find some sort of little friendly wager on this series.
I like it. Yeah, let's do it.
So stay tuned for the results of that, and we'll be sure to let you guys know how what we put on it, because let's face it, you'll know who lost the bet by the end of it. But let's go Yankees. That's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen. Thank you guys for listening to the episode, and stay tuned next week as we finally get into regular season baseball talk.